Hello, knowledge seekers. In this episode of 20 Minute Books, we delve into Truman Capote's groundbreaking true crime novel, In Cold Blood. Published in 1966, this meticulously crafted narrative documents the chilling account of a brutal quadruple murder in the small town of Holcomb, Kansas, in 1959. Capote's work offers a deep exploration of the dark side of human nature and the complexities of American society. In Cold Blood is where literature meets journalism, with Capote's innovative approach setting the stage for the true crime genre. Through his vivid prose and meticulous attention to detail, he reconstructs the murder and the subsequent investigation that led to the capture, trial, and execution of the killers, Richard Hickok and Perry Smith. This book not only provides a compelling step-by-step account of the crimes, but also dives deeply into the psychological background of the murderers and the impact of these horrific events on the community. Capote, a master storyteller and a key figure in post-war American literature, transports readers into the depths of the human psyche, challenging perceptions of sanity, justice, and moral responsibility. His flair for narrative builds a gripping, suspenseful story that holds the attention of crime enthusiasts and psychological thriller aficionados alike. This book is a must-listen for fans of suspense and crime novels. Anyone interested in criminal psychology or readers curious about the origins and influences of the true crime genre. Join us as we explore how Truman Capote's In Cold Blood revolutionized storytelling and shaped a new future for literary journalism. In Cold Blood, a true account of a multiple murder and its consequences. Introduction. A chilling peek into a devastating crime that captivated a nation. It was a bleak November in 1959 when the echo of a brutal crime reverberated through the quaint streets and homes of Holcomb, Kansas. Acclaimed author Truman Capote was immediately captivated by the harrowing news reports detailing the aftermath of a tragic quadruple homicide. His interest piqued, Capote decided to delve deeper into this dark event, traveling to Kansas accompanied by his friend, the talented novelist Harper Lee. In the quiet heartland of America, amidst the sprawling fields and humble town, Capote and Lee meticulously gathered the threads of this tragic story. They blended into the small community, forging connections with local residents who had been shaken to their core by the violence that had erupted among them. Capote's journey led him directly to the minds behind the murderous rampage, two culprits who had been swiftly arrested by the authorities. He engaged in detailed discussions with the accused, peeling back layers of malice and despair to expose the raw human emotions underneath. This narrative paints a vivid tableau of a seemingly isolated murder spree that had broader implications, capturing the interest of a nation. You will discover the eerie link of simple stockings to the tragic fate of a local family, witness how a small sheriff's office became engulfed by a relentless media storm and unravel, how an unexpected encounter with a hitchhiker prevented an additional tragedy. Through these insights, you'll gain an intimate glimpse into the depths of human complexity, laid bare by a chilling act committed in cold blood. Part 1. A Chilling Preparation for a Deadly Plan in a Quiet Kansas Town. Imagine the tools one might consider for a sinister deed. Perhaps the mind jumps to intricate gadgets or ominous weapons. However, for two men embroiled in planning the murder of a Kansas family in 1959, their shopping list was deceptively simple yet chilling. Here's a look into the peculiar preparations undertaken by Dick Hickok, a 28-year-old mechanic, and Perry Smith, a 31-year-old former car painter. Both men, previously tarnished by criminal records, embarked on an unusual shopping journey in Emporia, Kansas, gathering items that would soon play a sinister role in a gruesome act. Their first stop was an unassuming retail store where they purchased rubber gloves. Perry picked out a pair to match Dick's already acquired ones. Their next destination was a women's hosiery shop. They sought black stockings, a choice aimed more at anonymity during their grim task than fashion. However, they left empty-handed as the shop only stocked lighter shades. Their final errand was at a hardware store where they focused on buying rope. Perry, with his background as a merchant marine, possessed intricate knowledge about rope's durability and strength. This expertise led him to select a robust white nylon cord, a choice dictated more by function than form. To any onlooker, their purchases might have seemed innocuous enough, just a couple of men running weekend errands. Yet the conversations between the duo could have unraveled their sinister intentions. For instance, in the hosiery shop, upon realizing their specific request couldn't be fulfilled, Dick reiterated to Perry the crucial rule: no witnesses. A chilling reminder of their plan's ruthlessness. Despite their meticulous planning, a gnawing uncertainty loomed between them about the specifics of their target's household composition. Their knowledge was limited to the certainty of the parents and two children's presence, but the potential for additional unexpected guests led them to purchase 100 yards of nylon cord, enough to bind up to a dozen individuals securely. This narrative of seemingly mundane errands takes a dark turn as it sets the stage for one of the most harrowing crimes in American history, orchestrated with chilling precision and cold intent. Part 2. Horror unfolds in Holcomb as neighbors discover a grim murder scene. On a quiet Sunday morning in 1959, the small Kansas town of Holcomb was shaken by a chilling discovery at the Clutter family home. Known for their routine participation in Sunday church services, the Clutters' absence raised immediate concerns among their neighbors. Susan Kidwell, a neighbor and friend of the family, sensed that something was terribly wrong after her attempts to reach them by phone went unanswered. Compelled by worry, she, along with a few other neighbors, decided to visit the Clutter home. The scene that greeted them was unsettling. The family's cars were all parked outside, a silent testament to their presence. Inside, an eerie stillness prevailed. Susan noticed the family's breakfast laid out but untouched, and a purse carelessly left open on the floor, signs that something abrupt and serious had occurred. Pushed by a growing sense of dread, the group made their way upstairs to Nancy Clutter's bedroom, the 16-year-old daughter. The sight that met them there was horrific. Nancy's lifeless body, the room a stark tableau of violence and chaos. Susan's screams pierced the silence, drawing the other neighbors inside. The immediate confusion gave way to a grim realization as another neighbor, Nancy Ewalt, repeatedly murmured in shock, "She's dead." It was a scene none of them were prepared for. First responders were called to the scene, and soon the bodies of the other family members were discovered in various rooms. Each victim showed signs of brutal restraint, bound by cords and gagged. Their lives ended violently. Mrs. Clutter and her two children had been shot in the head, while Mr. Clutter bore the marks of torture and a fatal gunshot through the head. The discovery of the Clutters, a seemingly ideal and beloved family, bound and murdered in their own home, sent shockwaves throughout the community and beyond. The question on everyone's mind was a haunting why. Why such brutality could befall such an ordinary, respected family in their safe, close-knit community. Part 3. Kansas Bureau of Investigation steps in amidst growing media storm. The quadruple homicide of the Clutter family sent shockwaves through the local law enforcement system. Initially, the local sheriff's department, characterized by its laid-back atmosphere and camaraderie, found itself overwhelmed with a case that had neither clear leads nor an apparent motive. Amidst rapidly growing media attention, which transformed the once quiet sheriff's office into a bustling hub of activity, it became evident that this investigation required expertise beyond what the local force could offer. Enter Alvin Adams Dewey, a seasoned 47-year-old agent from the Kansas Bureau of Investigation, KBI, tasked with spearheading the complicated investigation. With a team of 19 skilled detectives at his disposal, Dewey represented the advance reinforcement needed to untangle the perplexing details of the case. As the investigation intensified, almost the entire KBI team, consisting of 18 officers, was deployed to work exclusively on the Clutter case, a testament to its complexity and the pressure to bring the brutal murderer or murderers to justice. During the initial press conference, Dewey highlighted the primary challenge of the investigation, identifying the intended target within the family. The understanding was that once the primary victim was identified, it would clarify that the other family members were likely murdered to eliminate any potential witnesses. This line of reasoning, however, was complicated by the inability of the coroner to determine the exact times of death for each victim, blurring the sequence of the murders. Faced with such indeterminate information and mounting public pressure, the investigation was a daunting task from the onset, with the law enforcement team at a loss on how to proceed effectively. This situation set the stage for a meticulous, high-stakes investigation that would captivate and horrify the nation. Part 4: Mysterious Apparition in the Clutter Home Leads to Mistaken Suspect. Imagine encountering a spectral figure in a house touched by tragedy. This startling experience befell Paul Helm, the gardener for the Clutter family, igniting a brief but intense flare of hope in an otherwise stagnant investigation. It was a chilly December day, and Helm was busy tidying up the garden of the now desolate Clutter household, which the family's relatives had put on the market. As he lifted his gaze towards the house, a sudden movement caught his eye, a ghostly figure peering out from behind a window curtain. The sight was unsettling, yet unclear due to the dimming winter light. As Helm squinted against the glare, hoping for a clearer view, the curtain swiftly fell back into place, and the figure vanished. Shaken, Helm wasted no time crossing the fields to alert the sheriff, convinced that the eerie figure might be linked to the murders. With potential new evidence at hand, the sheriff, accompanied by KBI agents and the indefatigable Detective Dewey, hastened back to the Clutter home, hopeful for a breakthrough. As they prepared to storm the house, a disheveled, wild-eyed man walked out, easing their entry but heightening their suspicions. Armed and unkempt, the man, identified as Jonathan Adrian, seemed a plausible suspect, especially when a search of his vehicle revealed a 12-gauge shotgun and a hunting knife. Seized by the moment, the investigators were convinced they had apprehended the perpetrator. However, ensuing weeks of intense questioning unveiled the truth. Adrian, despite his unsettling appearance and questionable possessions, was merely a drifter drawn to the notorious house out of curiosity. He had no connection to the grim events that had taken place within its walls, leaving the investigators back at square one, with a case as elusive as ever. Part 5: A Prison Inmate's Memory Triggers a Breakthrough in the Clutter Case. In an unexpected twist, a crucial lead in the Clutter family murder case emerged from behind the grim walls of Kansas State Penitentiary. While police struggled to piece together the chilling events that had transpired in the Clutter household, a radio broadcast turned out to be the linchpin in unraveling the mystery. On a cold November evening, as Floyd Wells, an inmate at the penitentiary, tuned into a radio program detailing the Clutter case, a familiar name caught his attention: the Clutter family. The narrative of bound, gagged, and brutally shot victims triggered a stark realization in him. Floyd knew the perpetrators. Years back, Floyd had shared a prison cell with Dick Hickok for about a month. During their time together, Floyd had spoken of his former employer, Mr. Clutter, a man he described as decent and wealthy. Intrigued, Hickok had probed for more details, learning from Floyd about an alleged safe in the Clutter home filled with money. Haunted by the revelation that his past conversation might have catalyzed such a gruesome act, Floyd wrestled with the decision to come forward. Betraying a former inmate was a risky move that could have dire consequences within the prison's concealed codes of conduct. Conflicted, Floyd sought counsel from a fellow inmate, a devout man who underscored the moral imperative of truth. Strategically, they approached the deputy warden, asking to arrange a seemingly trivial meeting with the warden for Floyd. This maneuver ensured that his crucial testimony could be delivered discreetly, without exposing him to the dangers associated with being labeled a snitch in the penal system. With Floyd's testimony, investigators finally had their first solid lead, piecing together the narrative that led to the tragic events at the Clutter home, all stemming from a seemingly benign prison conversation. This revelation marked a pivotal moment in the investigation, steering it towards the culprits behind one of Kansas's most infamous crimes. Part 6: The Complex Dynamics Between Perry and Dick. Delusion and Manipulation. The partnership that led to the tragic Clutter family murders stemmed from a tangled web of deceit and manipulation, primarily woven by Perry Smith and Dick Hickok during their incarceration at the Kansas State Penitentiary. But how did Perry, painted by Dick as a natural killer, end up entangled in such a nefarious plan? Their prison relationship started with skepticism, particularly from Dick's side, until a chilling claim by Perry of having killed a man with a bicycle chain shifted Dick's perception. This brutal imagery impressed Dick, convincing him of Perry's cold-blooded nature. It was then that Dick saw in Perry not just a fellow inmate, but an asset for executing the perfect crime. Once released from prison, Dick wasted no time. He beckoned Perry to Kansas, dangling the prospect of a lucrative heist based on the inside information about the Clutter's supposed fortune. However, the backbone of Perry's criminal persona, the story of his murderous act with a bicycle chain, was nothing more than a fabrication aimed at gaining respect and influence. Perry's motives for returning to Kansas were complex. While he did agree to join in on the crime, his primary objective was to reunite with Willie J., a prison chaplain's clerk who had recognized Perry's artistic potential and offered him companionship. Perry had suffered through a harrowing childhood, and these connections provided him with a sense of worth. Unfortunately, upon his arrival in Kansas, Perry found that Willie J. had already left. Stranded with nowhere to turn, Perry met up with Dick, and the two proceeded with their ill-fated plan. As they carried out the crime and later fled to Mexico, Perry indulged in his long-held fantasy of treasure hunting in the seas, a stark contrast to the grim reality of their actions. Throughout their flight, Perry followed the unfolding news of the investigation with a detached curiosity, displaying no remorse for the lives taken. His reaction to the extensive funeral of the Clutter family was particularly telling. He expressed astonishment at the scale and expense, further highlighting his emotional disconnection from the gravity of their crime. The dynamic between Perry and Dick, a mixture of delusion and exploitation, paints a grim portrait of how deeply personal vulnerabilities can be manipulated, leading to tragic outcomes. Part 7: Narrow Escape on the Nebraska Roads, A Salesman's Brush with Danger. For Mr. Bell, a routine job as a traveling salesman took an unexpected turn into the perilous, illustrating just how fate can pivot on the smallest of decisions. While driving through Nebraska en route to Omaha, Mr. Bell encountered two hitchhikers by the roadside. Welcoming the company, he unsuspectingly invited them into his car, unaware that he was ushering in potential doom. The hitchhikers introduced themselves as Dick and Perry. Friendly and normal on the surface, their dark intentions were concealed just beneath this veneer. Little did Mr. Bell know, his decision to offer a ride was placing him directly in the crosshairs of two fugitives planning their next crime. As they traveled, an insidious plan unfolded in the back seat. Perry was to strangle Mr. Bell with a belt, while Dick, ensuring control of the vehicle, would assist in overpowering their unsuspecting victim. The grim finale would see them disposing of the body in a secluded prairie grave, then disappearing with Mr. Bell's car and any valuables. However, as they journeyed, a surprising camaraderie developed between Mr. Bell and Dick, who shared jokes and laughter, creating an atmosphere starkly at odds with the sinister plot being considered. Perry, positioned in the back seat, grew increasingly agitated as he awaited the prearranged signal. A casual request for a match from Dick, which would prompt him to execute their murderous plan. But just as the moment seemed imminent, destiny intervened. Mr. Bell, perhaps guided by an unseen hand of fate, decided to stop and pick up another passenger. This impulsive act of kindness created an immediate shift in circumstances. With another person in the car, the dynamics changed, and the planned assault became too risky to execute. This twist of fate, the decision to stop for another hitchhiker, spared Mr. Bell from a potentially tragic end, illustrating how unforeseen actions can profoundly alter the course of events, and indeed, the course of a life. Part 8, The Fatal Error That Led to the Capture of Kansas's Most Wanted. The old adage, criminals eventually slip up, proved true for the infamous duo responsible for the Clutter family murders. In a bold, or perhaps foolhardy maneuver, Dick Hickok and Perry Smith returned to Kansas in December 1959. Kansas was not only their homeland, but also the scene of their heinous crime, making their return all the more audacious. Dick, ever the smooth operator, reverted to his old habits of running con jobs in local shops. His method involved charming shopkeepers, making substantial purchases, and then feigning forgetfulness about his wallet. The trusting shopkeepers would be persuaded to accept a blank check, a check that was bound to bounce. This time, however, Dick's charm did not have its intended effect. One wary shop owner, sensing something amiss, meticulously noted the license plate of the Chevrolet that Dick and Perry hastily drove away in. This quick-thinking action provided law enforcement with their first tangible lead since the murder investigation began. Authorities tracked the Chevrolet to Las Vegas, and on December 30, 1959, police officers, recognizing the vehicle and its occupants from the description provided, apprehended the suspects. However, capturing Dick and Perry was one thing. Proving their guilt in the Clutter murders was another challenge entirely. The evidence was scant, and building a solid case was daunting. Alvin Dewey, the lead detective from the Kansas Bureau of Investigation, traveled to Las Vegas to personally interrogate the suspects. He targeted Dick, the more loquacious of the pair, and strategically mentioned Floyd Wells, an indirect witness who knew of Dick's intentions toward the Clutters. The breakthrough came when investigators matched footprints found at the Clutter crime scene to the boots Dick and Perry wore at the time of their arrest. Faced with this damning evidence, Dick cracked and confessed to his role as an accomplice in the murders committed by Perry. The case swiftly moved to trial, and the evidence proved overwhelming. After a mere 45 minutes of deliberation, a Kansas jury sentenced both men to death. The grim saga came to a close in 1965, when Dick and Perry were executed by hanging, marking a somber resolution to a case that had gripped the nation's attention. Part 9. The Brutal Unraveling of a Theft Turned Murder in the Clutter Home. The detailed confessions from Dick Hickok and Perry Smith revealed the harrowing events that transpired on that tragic night at the Clutter residence. The aim was simple: find the safe, rumored by a former cellmate to contain a small fortune. As they infiltrated the Clutter home just after midnight through an unlocked side door, their hopes were high. But the house yielded no safe, no riches. A stark disappointment that escalated the situation to grim heights. Confronting Herb Clutter with pressing demands for the non-existent safe, the duo was met with calm denials of any significant cash or valuables in the house. Frustrated and fueled by desperation, Dick resorted to threats with a knife, pushing the atmosphere from tense to terrifying. The night took a more sinister turn as the pair separated the family members, confining them to different rooms. Perry's own recount described a chillingly meticulous approach. He even placed a pillow under the head of one of the bound sons in the basement, a haunting gesture of consideration amidst the horror. The tension escalated when Perry found Dick attempting to assault Nancy Clutter. Perry intervened, sternly prohibiting any such action. As the night wore on, Dick wavered on their initial ruthless strategy to leave no witnesses. A hesitation that irked Perry, who had begun to see through Dick's pretense of toughness. Driven by a twisted desire to prove Dick's cowardice, Perry took a dark, decisive step. He slashed Mr. Clutter's throat, propelling the night into irreversible brutality. Herb Clutter's struggle and the ensuing chaos culminated with Perry fatally shooting him. The violence didn't stop there. Perry's confession ambiguously implicated both perpetrators in the subsequent deaths of the other family members. As they left the crime scene, the trivial loot, a little cash, binoculars, and a radio, was nowhere near the fortunes they'd imagined. In a final contemplation of the lawless path they had trodden, Perry briefly considered eliminating Dick as well, ensuring his silence. Yet, for reasons unexplained, he refrained, leaving one last witness to the night's atrocities as they disappeared into the darkness, marking a grim close to a sinister chapter in criminal history. Final summary. At the heart of this compelling narrative is the chilling reminder that motives behind cold-blooded murders can simultaneously appear clear-cut and unfathomably complex. The eventual unraveling of such mysteries often hinges on the erratic missteps of the criminals involved, showcasing a grim dance between calculated acts and spur-of-the-moment decisions that can define the outcome of a case. This story exposes the depths of human cunning and desperation, along with the relentless pursuit of justice by those committed to uncovering the truth. Thank you for joining me today on this journey of learning and discovery as we explored the insights of another thought-provoking book in our growing library of knowledge. If you've enjoyed our time together, please take a moment to follow our podcast, give us a 5-star rating, and share 20-minute books with other knowledge seekers. Your support truly means a lot. Don't forget to join me again in the next episode, where we will delve into another enriching book. Until then, happy reading and happy listening.